Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th of March, Anno Domini 2017, living in the past. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Before that, we should, you know, mention a very good friend of ours.
That was going to be the first thing.
Yeah. As most of you folks know, Bob Smith passed away just a couple days ago, and he was a near and dear friend to all three of us for close to 11 years. And it's sorry to say, you know, that he's left us, and I'm going to miss him, you know?
Yeah, he was a heck of a character. I was proud to call him my friend.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a post on it on the homepage of Soundbites. He was 63. He had a stroke and suffered a long illness because of it. But he was a terrific human being, probably the smartest person I will ever meet. And just a hell of a human being.
I still remember numerous times he'd start worrying because Steve wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
And we go,
yep.
Till the news is over with, don't worry.
That's right. He's got until 7 minutes after the hour to show up.
And Steve would do it. It wasn't until it had to take him at least a good year or so to finally get comfortable with it.
Yeah, to finally get comfortable with it. Well, he's an old time radio guy, and if people aren't there early, they're not there.
Yeah. Yep.
And because Steve would come in just in time to walk to the mic and say, run to the mic.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
But those were
before Steve was doing all the amazing stuff he's doing with the YouTube video, which is up and running, with the audio archive and everything else. So those were the days when we could just all walk in and sit down and go.
Yeah.
Before we even had the internet to fall back on.
And I still had to work on Saturday.
Right, and you had to work on Saturday. Yeah. He was amazing. He was amazing. A good human being.
Mm-hmm.
And just flipping smart. Jesus crackers.
And he was so, what's the word, unflappable. Guests would get riled up. Callers would get riled up.
And he'd just sit there as smooth as, you know, silk. Just right along. You'd never hear him go up or down. You know, he's just right there in the middle. Yep. Right there in the middle all the time.
Yep. Pretty amazing human being.
Mm-hmm.
The world is a lesser place today because of it. All right, to the news. Microsoft's batch of security patches for March is one of the largest ever and includes fixes for several vulnerabilities that are publicly known and actively exploited. In point of fact, they were publicly known and actively exploited last month when Microsoft postponed this update and didn't have one in February. Microsoft published 17 security bulletins covering 132 vulnerabilities in its own product and one separate bulletin for Flash Player, which has its security patches distributed through Windows Update because otherwise nobody would ever update them. 9 bulletins are rated critical and 9 are rated as important. The affected products include Windows, Internet Explorer, Microsoft Edge, Microsoft Office, Exchange, Skype for Business, Microsoft Link, and Silverlight. Most of which you probably use.
Used once and don't remember they're still installed in your computer.
Right, exactly. The highest priority should be given to MS-17-013. That security bulletin addresses remote code execution, privilege escalation, and information disclosure flaws in the Windows graphics component, graphics device interface, or GDI, and color management. Those vulnerabilities affect Windows, Office, Skype, Link, and Silverlight. So pretty much the only one they miss is Exchange. The remote code execution flaws can be exploited by tricking users into opening a specially crafted website or document. What's worse is that one of the vulnerabilities is publicly known and another is actually already actively exploited. Another important bulletin is MS-17-012, which fixes a vulnerability in the Windows System Message Block, or SMB Network File Sharing Protocol, that was publicly disclosed over a month ago. The MS-17-006 and MS-17-007 bulletins for Microsoft Edge and Internet Explorer also contain vulnerabilities that have been publicly disclosed, including a critical remote code execution one that, again, has been out there in the wild for over a month, unfixed by Microsoft. On the server side, the Microsoft Exchange and IIS bulletins, MS-17-015 and MS-17-016, should be prioritized because these systems are typically exposed to the internet. Several administrators should also direct their attention to the bulletins for Hyper-V virtualization, which is MS-17-008, and Active Directory Federation Server, MS-17-019. Overall, it's going to be a very busy time for IT departments of all sizes due to the large number of desktop and server patches. The high number of patches in this release are because Microsoft decided to postpone by a month the security updates it had originally scheduled for February. This unprecedented decision was made due to an unspecified last-minute issue and was criticized by many researchers, especially since there were a number of publicly known flaws. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Microsoft update fixes record number of flaws, and your choices are: I've already updated, I'll update immediately, I'll get to it eventually, don't touch my Windows 7, and micro what now? So far, 40% of you said micro what now, followed by 23% who've said I've already updated. Some of those are lies, of course. Don't touch my Windows 7 is, of course, next, followed by I'll update immediately and I'll get to it eventually. So far, 30 people have voted, so we'd love to have you join us and vote. And then, of course, we know many of you will have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, it's the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And at the moment, at least, the number one, the top topic is 18 March 17, Microsoft update fixes record number of flaws. So far, two people have posted four things, and we would love to have you join us there. And of course, if you'd like to actually speak to a human being, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And due to the sort of wide scope of how many Microsoft products were affected, how many versions of Windows they say were affected, it's much likely that the unsupported versions of Windows are also affected by these flaws.
Yep.
And they will not be patched. So right, your old Windows 7s, the old Windows 8s, you know, Vista, XP, anything earlier than that, are vulnerable, most likely, to these patches.
And these flaws. Many of them are being actively exploited. Right. So if you're running not 10... then you're probably somewhere in the exploited range, and you should probably update or take your machine off the internet or do whatever it is you want to do. But the point is, you're vulnerable, and you need to fix that.
That SMB one was really critical. That's some of the speculation is that's what they were trying to release last month, and it wasn't ready. So instead of releasing what they had, they just canceled everything, which is really
stupid.
Bad, yeah.
Yeah.
That SMB is the file sharing protocol that's built into pretty much every computer.
Right.
And there was a problem where it was on by default for most computers. And so you can open a website, and in that website is a URL, you know, SMB:// that then starts browsing the files on your hard drive.
Right.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's real bad.
Yeah.
That's akin to back when Apple first started using file sharing.
Yeah.
It came on by default. It came with the machine on.
Yeah.
And you could, if you had the right tools at the time, and now those are the common tools built into every operating system, you could find those machines and just open them up and read them. Apple was much faster at fixing that than Microsoft was.
All the sharing services are off by default on the Macs. Right. So if you have several computers in your house and you go to your network neighborhood and you see the other computers, your sharing is turned on.
Yeah, and everybody else who wants to can see them. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. All right, to the phones. Robin. Our first caller is Alex from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Alex. What's up?
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I just turned the radio on, and you were talking about something record breach with Microsoft.
Yes.
And I had a problem with my computer yesterday. The whole network was compromised.
Yeah, define compromised.
I had lots of viruses, and I called the tech support, Microsoft tech support.
No, you didn't.
And they found 10 established accounts, hackers.
Yeah, you didn't
to get to my.
You didn't call Microsoft.
Yeah, you didn't get a hold of Microsoft.
Microsoft doesn't have phone tech support. That's easily found. It was a fake message. You called fake tech support. Did you pay them any money?
I did.
They stole your money, and now they're likely going to steal your credit card and possibly steal your identity.
I would call your bank immediately and put a hold on your credit card. A stop on the amount if you can do that. Here's the problem, Alex. Microsoft doesn't do tech support. They will never call you. They will never put a message up on your machine. Neither will Apple. Neither will Google. Neither will any of these companies. And so if you get one, it is a scam. And that scam means that what you've done is you probably called the number. They said, run this software. We'll fix your machine remotely. And that meant they got into your machine.
And they do all sorts of scary things to scare you into thinking it's real. They prove, in air quotes that the camera can see, they prove that you're being hacked, probably the NetStat, and to show you're connected to the internet. Yes, there are connections to the computer.
Right.
And so they do all this scary stuff to scare you into giving your credit card number.
So what you need to do is call your bank and put a stop on your credit card.
Secondly,
you need to, dance the security tango would be a start. But the better thing to do at this point, because who knows how deep this goes, take it to a reputable dealer and have them
clean it all up.
And that would probably be the best thing to do right now.
And the reputable dealer.
I keep saying that because I don't know. People hear this all over the world, so I don't know their dealers. In Rochester, dang near every one of them is reputable. I don't see
there's
an
plenty
issue.
Of us. There's plenty of us out there
with a physical store. You don't want to call a random phone number. And Googling Microsoft tech support, you're going to find lots of random phone numbers from random companies.
Local stores. If you look up any of the local stores, you'll find. That there's lots of them in your area. There are some in Irondequoit. They're all over town.
Yeah, I'm over there.
Yes, Dave's over there.
One of them is a sponsor of the show.
Right. Dave is over there at Enright PC, and of course, Frag Computers is there. So either of those would be an excellent place to take your machine and get it cleaned out. I cannot stress enough that you need to do this immediately.
And for everybody else out there listening, heed our words. It's just not right now. Anytime, if you get a message stating that your machine is infected, and it's usually these blue screens with all this writing, and it doesn't want you to do anything else, it more or less locks up your browser.
Close the window. Call the phone number. Close the window. We'll erase your hard drive.
Yeah.
Big, scary messages.
Yeah. So the best thing to do is shut the machine off.
Immediately.
Anybody out there, you get that message, turn your machine off. Restart it. It breaks that link to that site, and then dance the security tango.
Yep.
Yep.
And so I'll let you have your marching orders now.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Yep. I'm so sorry.
And unfortunately, these fake tech support scams are getting much more common. We had four of them last week in our shop. So
yep.
There's like a surge every now and then.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, we were talking about scams, and I do have one more thing to say. I got an email this week, which was clean. I mean, it looked right. And it was the IRS saying there was an absolute problem with my tax return, and I needed to call this number immediately. I looked up the number. It was a Washington, D.C. area code. I mean, they had everything right. But if you go to the IRS website, it will tell you, we never send email, we never call you directly, and we never take your money directly, like credit cards and over the phone and all that other stuff.
They only send postal mail.
They only send postal mail. So, if you got one of these, just ignore it. Just simply throw it away. Have a little laugh and throw it away. You were not being contacted by the IRS because they simply do not do that. So be aware. And this is the season for that, tax season.
Yep.
So the Ides of March are gone by. So it's time for the Ides of April to roll around. So
April 18th this year.
It's the 18th this year, right. So
got that extra weekend to panic and go to the post office and get the form.
My father-in-law, God rest his soul, was on the news pretty much every year because he'd be one of those guys at 11:59 at
the post office.
Getting the form.
No, handing in the form.
Yeah,
he waited until the last minute every year.
He'd always be up there watching, talking to people as they drive through to drop. So it's postmarked.
Yep.
Yeah. See, you do that. If you're getting a refund, we've already filed our return, and the refund's any day now.
Do you know, according to somebody I talked to, and I don't know that this is true because I'm not an accountant, if the government owes you money, you don't ever have to file. I don't know how they figured that out.
Yeah, because how do they know that they owe you money?
Right, exactly.
Until you got to file.
Yeah. Friend of mine
I'm sure they wouldn't mind not paying you.
Right. A friend of mine was audited for 7 years in a row. His lawyer told him if they audit you one more time, you can sue them. That's harassment.
Oh, really?
Because every year for 7 years, they discovered he did indeed do his taxes wrong. They owed him more money.
Ooh.
Nice. So he was one of those guys who said, please audit me. Come on down. You know, after about the third year, it was like, yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Hilton, New York. Hiya, Bob. What's up?
Hey, guys, how you doing there?
Peachy, how are you?
I tell you what, you guys are awesome. I love
your
show.
I love
it.
I love to hear that. Thanks. Next week, of course, you'll get a chance to be a member.
That's right. I took your advice, and I was able to upgrade an old laptop to Cloud Ready.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked good. It worked excellent. So I want to thank you for that, number one.
You're welcome. Don't sound so surprised.
Okay, so I get...
Once in a while, we get it right.
Yeah.
After reading on the site a little bit, it mentions that it does not support verified boot, so strict BIOS security settings are recommended after install. Can you explain what that is and if that's something that I need to do?
Yes. Okay, here's the deal. What real Chromebooks do, let me back up a step. Cloud Ready is a product from a company called Neverware at neverware.com. And WARE, Neverware, like software. It turns an old laptop or any computer into what is essentially a Chromebook. Because the Chrome operating system is open source, so anybody can create a Chrome OS. One of the differences between a real Chromebook and Neverware is the additional things that Google has done to the Chromebook itself. One of the things about Chromebooks is it is almost impossible for them to get a virus because it has something called verified boot. There are two versions of the boot system in memory, in read-only memory in the system. Yeah. Okay. So when you turn the machine on, the first thing it does is check those two versions against each other. If they are identical, then it boots. If they are not identical, it goes out to a special, often changing place at Google to find the authorized real version of the OS, downloads it, installs it, and then boots.
Okay.
So that's verified boot. It will not boot if the operating system has been tampered with, making it very hard for a virus to live on the system. It's not impossible to get a virus, but the way you get rid of it is turn your machine off, turn it on again.
Okay.
And it will be literally removed if it is there at all. So that verified boot requires a very special version of the BIOS, the basic input-output system, that's in every machine, and it is different from the one that has traditionally come on every computer for the last 40 years. So you cannot get verified boot cloud ready because the hardware doesn't support it.
Okay.
That's so, and they're just, you know, that's one of the big selling points of Chromebooks, and the folks at Neverware are just making sure you understand that legally they can't claim that, and they do not.
And sort of the bottom line to you is it doesn't really matter.
That was my next question. Right. So is it something that I need to be concerned with or not?
Not really, no.
No?
No. Okay. You could. There are, at least at this point, no viruses that hit Chromebooks. And so really, you don't have to worry about it right now.
Okay.
We'll see what happens in the future.
No. As far as the updates goes, how do you get the updates? Do they come in automatically, or do you have to put them on a thumb drive to do it? No. Or how does it work?
It works like this. When you have an update ready, which happens, well, no, I was about to say every 2 weeks, but that's on a Chromebook. Yeah, no. On cloud ready, it's a little longer deal. But what happens is down in the lower right near the time,
right,
you'll see a little box with an up arrow in it. That means there's an update available. The way you update, and if you don't notice that, it doesn't matter, because the way Chromebooks update is you turn them off, you turn them on again. So even if you don't notice it, every time you turn it on, if there's an update, that update happens.
It does it by itself.
It's already downloaded it and installed it in the background, and you activate it by turning the machine off and then on again.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll tell you, I brought new life to an old Toshiba, and it works like a brand-new computer. I got rid of the Windows 10. It was just bogging it down.
Yep.
And it works great.
Good for
I'm really impressed. And I got to just ask you one more quick question here, if there is such a thing.
Yeah. The questions are always
Windows
quick.
Windows 7 on my desktop.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a huge amount of cookies. I'm getting like 800 to 1,000 every day. I'm running super anti-spyware every day to remove them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is there any way I can somehow reduce the amount of cookies that I'm getting?
No.
Stop going to websites.
Well, yeah. That's what happens is every time you go to a website, pretty much everything on it these days gives you cookies. So, you know, you go to some websites and you see that they're surrounded by ads. All of those ads are setting cookies. So you
like
do
Yahoo Mail, probably, right?
Oh yeah,
especially Yahoo Mail. Especially don't use the website. You can use an email program like Thunderbird rather than the website.
Right, right. And the basic idea there is that every time you do that, every time you go to one of those websites, every time you open one of those emails on Yahoo, every time you refresh it, you get a whole new set of ads and a whole new set of cookies.
And that's why I switched to Gmail.
Yeah. There you go.
I have an account on Yahoo, so I have to check both. And I think that's where I'm getting most of the cookies.
I suspect it might be.
And you can tell Gmail to go out and grab the Yahoo mail for you and bring them into your Gmail account.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that for sure.
Yeah,
there you go.
One thing that you can do that may help minimize the issue is in your browser settings, there's something called third-party cookies.
Right,
I saw that. You want to turn those off. And that can cut down on the number of ads that
can set cookies.
That can set cookies on websites.
So basically, you have the site that you've gone to, right? And if it sets a cookie, well, you get that. Get over it.
And that's the first party.
Right. Then I don't think there is a second party.
There's never a second party. I don't know who the second party is. Right. It's first party and third party.
But all the ads on the site, those are third parties. And if you turn off accept third-party cookies, those ads can't set cookies.
All right.
But it also may mean...
Trying right there, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes that means the website won't work and says you must turn on third-party cookies.
Right. Sometimes that's true, but rarely.
And in that case, I usually just don't go back to that site.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So does 1,000 cookies a day seem like a lot? Or
No, not at all. Not, you know, if you're surfing, yeah, they're going to come in.
Particularly if you're using Yahoo and you're checking mail regularly and going to sites that refresh and blah, blah,
hello,
blah, blah,
it's
blah.
An operating system that's been dead for a while.
Well, and that's the other problem, of course. I wasn't going to bring that up, but I suppose I should.
Yeah.
You know that Windows 7 is no longer supported, right?
Yeah, I'm aware. The problem I've got with switching from Windows 7 is I have a website that I've developed, and I'm using Front Page. And I don't know if Front Page is compatible with Windows 10.
Front Page was killed a decade ago, wasn't
it? Yeah.
It might behoove you to spend just a little time learning something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the problem with that is I've got a number one ranking on Google, and I don't want to mess that up by switching to a different site and losing all my keys and everything.
Right. No, I get that. I truly do. I don't know what to tell
you. You're just dealing with a loaded gun there.
Discontinued in 2007.
Yeah. Any idea whether Front Page would work on Windows 10?
I suspect it will not.
It loaded. I put it on my laptop that has Windows 10, and it loaded okay, but I didn't test it.
You can load it, but whether it's going to work or not is a whole different thing.
To be honest, there's a lot of programs that are 10 years old that I haven't tried. Sorry to put it that way, but so you certainly give it a try.
One thing you might be able to do is in the Windows Front Page, if you right-click on it, there's a compatibility mode. And you might be able to fake the operating system out and telling it that it's still Windows, say, 2007.
Okay.
You know, or one of the older versions of Windows.
Right.
You know, and I didn't mean 2000. Windows 7.
Windows 7. I knew what you meant.
Take it back to Windows 7, and it will, you know, when the software starts up, it goes to check the operating system, and the operating system lies to the program and says, yeah, we're Windows 7, and it lets it run. So check.
Okay, that's called compatibility mode.
Yes. See if there's if you right click on the program that's on your desktop, right click on it, and see if there's a compatibility mode that you can change it to.
Also, check with whoever is hosting your web page and see if they have another program that will work instead of Front Page.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate all the info, guys, and keep up the good work.
Thanks.
And I really enjoy your show.
Thank you so much. Have fun.
All right. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
I was just Googling around, you know, Front Page in Windows 10, and I find this link to download the latest version of Front Page, version 2017, free download. Nice.
Nice.
So I click on it, and the server here says, no, malware.
Yep. What a surprise.
Which I kind of figured anyway.
Well, what was the name of the site? It had a weird name of some sort, too.
Well, it's Microsoft Office Front Page. That's real, right?
.english.downloadastro.com. Yeah, okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fake. So, when you're doing searches, you have to make sure you look at the entire address so that it's the real address of who you really think you're going to. You know, as it goes back to the earlier caller, just Google, Microsoft tech support, you'll find hundreds of companies offering tech support for Microsoft products, none of which are Microsoft.
Right. Right. Most of which are scams.
Yeah. If anything, you'd go to Microsoft.com, and they do have a chat tech support that will then probably refer you to a dealer. Or charge you money, yeah.
But if you went to realmicrosoft.com and initiated a chat, you can be pretty sure you actually talked to Microsoft.
Yeah.
All right. We've got enough time to at least get the question in from Roger from Greece, New York. Hi, Roger. What's up?
Hi. I have two questions for you. One is that when I receive an email with a JPEG attachment, I cannot open it.
What email program are you using?
Firefox. Oh, no, I'm sorry, EarthLink.
Neither of those are email programs.
I'm sorry?
Are you using the Firefox web browser?
No. I misspoke. It's Earthlink is my email.
Earthlink has their own email program?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's probably a security setting because JPEGs can
Is
contain...
it webmail? Are you actually going through, say, Firefox to an Earthlink website and seeing the email on the web browser?
Well, I go to the Earthlink website. You know, I open Firefox.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, I have a...
webmail.earthlink.net.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, there
all right.
You go.
So, yeah, all right. That's not a program. That's a website. So, right. There's.
All right. Hold on.
Coming.
We got to take a break. Stay on the line, Roger. We'll be right back to you in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenik Francesco, Roger from Greece, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, and this is the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Roger from Greece on the line who is asking about email image attachments at Earthlink. Now, Roger, are you saying that you can't see it on the screen or you can't download it?
Okay, in the basic email, it shows up as an attachment.
Yep.
When I click on the attachment, I just did, and give me a second.
It may be a security precaution. Many email and webmail clients won't show you JPEGs because they could be porn or spam, and so you have to click another button to say show images.
Okay, running slow now. It hasn't gotten to opening the JPEG.
And it should open with the Windows Image Viewer, right? So you don't need another program loaded to view a JPEG.
Right. It should show. If you're doing it in the web browser,
it should show in the web
browser. So it's listed as an attachment, and you can't actually see it.
Okay, what happens when I click on the JPEG in the main email? It just opened. It says opening unknown dash numeral 2. You have chosen to open unknown dash 2, which is text document.
So it wasn't the JPEG.
Pardon me?
It wasn't the JPEG.
Is this from someone you know?
It's from my daughter. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Claims to be
in the main email, it shows it as a JPEG. That's the file, the way it's shown.
A lot of malicious programs will be like .jpeg .text or .jpeg .exe. So you see .jpeg and think it's a JPEG, but it's actually a malicious .exe, and it could be a spoof of your daughter's message. It may not actually be from her.
Well, in this case, I believe it is. I mean, we have talked, and my wife has received, my daughter sent the email to both me and my wife, and my wife gets it on her iPad, and she's able to open it, and in this case, there was one, you know, photograph, and there's others where, you know, there are several. In fact, she followed up with several photographs. This problem not being able to open these JPEGs has been going on for a few months. I just haven't gotten around to calling you.
Yeah, what it sounds like is that there's a setting somewhere in the Earthlink email, but unfortunately, I don't have an Earthlink address, so I don't know where exactly you would find it. But I can't lead you to it. But many of these systems have an ability to block any of these picture type things because they do not know if it's good or not, if it's a good thing or a bad thing, right? So they tend to block it. And we don't have, do you have an account?
No, but a customer does. Let me see if I still have his credentials.
Now, do you think this would be in Earthlink or could it be in Firefox?
both.
Well, it certainly could be an either one. So, okay. If so, the images are not displaying, and what I would suggest you do is in the Earthlink webmail, you look under preferences.
Mm-hmm.
There is a message display tab. If you click on image display, you can select show images, and that might just show it to you right there.
Okay.
But in terms of downloading it, I honestly.
Well, I'm just looking to display it.
Right. Well, try that.
Mm-hmm.
And if that works, I know that that's generally turned off, again, for the same reason.
Okay.
So if you are, hold on, I'm on there.
I just got something similar, but it downloaded it anyway. It's called Unknown 41, but it didn't warn me there was a problem.
Right. So I would try that under preferences. Click the display, the message display tab. Click on image display and then select show images. Well, they don't make that easy.
Okay.
But I would suggest that that's the place to start. And if you can then view it, well, that's 90% of your battle, right? So
right.
That's the thing that is that you wanted to do. And the other part of the problem, of course, is email was never originally designed to do anything but text. And so every email program has just a slightly different way that they can add. There are about 50 different ways you can add an image to an email message. And it seems that so many people use a different one, and there's no standard. So
well, there's 50 standards.
Right, right, right. The beautiful thing about standards is there's so many of them. So I would suggest that you try that and see what happens.
Okay, thank you.
And this is specifically for Earthlink. That solution doesn't. What can happen is particularly with Earthlink, the other thing you can do is you can opt to display only the portions of the email that have been delivered securely. And again, that's under preferences.
Okay.
Pictures are not secure by definition because malicious code can be hidden into a picture, right? So if you have two things, display images to begin with, that make sure that's turned on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't exactly know where to go to get this, and I'm sorry, but somewhere in there will be display only the portions of the email that have been delivered securely, that are secure. And if you turn that off, you'll be able to see everything. Now, be aware, of course, that doing that does make you slightly more vulnerable.
Okay, and, although it is something I can turn on and turn off.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Once you know where it is, you can go to it and do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, one of the first reasons I stopped doing that was because of all the porn spam mail where, you know, you open your email and there's a giant porn picture that you may not appreciate.
Right.
And so messages are hidden by default. And the other problem is that because malicious JPEGs, what do they call it, a specially malformed JPEG,
right.
In addition to having an image on it, there can actually embed a code that can get executed. So when you display the image, it executes a virus code on your computer. And so a lot of the mail programs will hide images because of that also.
I see.
Right.
Okay. My other question is that occasionally when I'm working in Excel and I'm typing in, you know, data into the into a spreadsheet, I must hit a wrong key or a wrong sort of sequence, like, and it locks up and I can't, you know, put anything more in from the keyboard. I have to shut the computer down, let it set, and then reboot it, and it clears that. Do you know what I'm hitting that causes it to lock up?
Is it a laptop or desktop?
No, it's a desktop.
Okay, well, it's one of two things. It is possible that, and I haven't tried this in a long time, there is a sequence called Control S and another one called Control Q. And Control S will stop your system, it will stop a program, and Control Q will let it start again.
Isn't that supposed to be save and quit?
Well, yes. but it might be the control shift Q or control alt Q, right? So some combination like that might be doing it. But there is no specific thing that is supposed to lock up Excel. Now, my question to you, of course, is how big is this spreadsheet and how much memory do you have?
The one that I'm working on, was working on last night, is small. You know, just I bet a couple dozen cells, and I believe I've got plenty of memory. Although I can't give you a good answer to that. I mean, once I shut down, reboot it, and come back into Excel, I can continue right on my way and without any problems.
All right. Go ahead.
I say that may be a corrupt file. One of the things you can do to help fix that is open the file, do a select all, close that file, make a brand new spreadsheet, brand new file, and paste. Then you get all your data over into the new file.
After select all, you have to do copy.
Thank you. So yeah, select all, copy, close, new, paste, and then save that new file. There might be something in that file that somehow got corrupted.
Right. The other thing it could be, what version of Windows are you running?
This is Windows 7.
Yeah, I was about to say. This actually was a known problem with older versions of Excel, and there have been updates to fix that. Those updates, of course, are not available under Windows 7. So I don't know what to tell you about that. But the other thing you might look to do is, how do you do it in 7? If there are add-ins to Excel, doggone it.
There's an add-in folder somewhere.
And my brain is frozen. But the problem is that either you just never got the update that fixed this issue for 7.
Okay, let me explain this. This computer where I'm running this Excel is not connected to the internet.
And that would also explain why you never got the update.
Yeah, no. I have not tried to update it. I mean, should I connect to the internet and try to update?
Don't bother. There are no more updates for Windows 7.
Oh.
It's done.
Oh, yeah.
There are some security updates, but they will not affect this issue in Excel. So don't bother.
He might find the old update still. There's no new updates, but if it's been a long time since it updated, it might find some of the old ones.
Right.
So I suppose it wouldn't hurt, although update your antivirus first.
Well, right. Always do that first. But you might want to check into add-ons. And Steve has added a post on the Soundbites website about Excel add-ins, which will lead you through the process.
Okay.
But that's the best I can tell you. And I really hate to give that answer, but unfortunately, because of the way Microsoft is dealing with old versions of the operating system, our answer is that there's no easy answer because it's Windows 7.
Okay.
One of the things you could do is, if you're not super tied to Excel, is switch to LibreOffice, a free open source office suite. It will read and write Excel files, so you can use all your Excel files. If you have to give a file to someone, you can save it as an Excel file. But it is current and currently still supported.
And it is free, and it does 99% of what Microsoft Office does.
And that was Libra?
Libre Office at LibreOffice.org.
Yep.
And one of the things that you can do, you can use it as is and do a save as to save as an Excel spreadsheet. Or you can go into the settings and say always save as Excel, and then always save as Word and always save as whatever. So LibreOffice comes with a word processor like Word, a spreadsheet like Excel, and a presentation software package like PowerPoint. It also comes with a database manager and drawing program and about 15 other things. So Steve is also putting a link to that up on the website. That'll be there in a moment or two. And it those all together make the LibreOffice suite, which many people find is a perfectly usable alternative to Windows. Like I said, about 99%
of Office,
right? The Office suite. It's a perfectly acceptable alternative, and about 99%. You know, if you're one of those people who uses some of the very esoteric functions in Excel, you may not be able to use it, but generally speaking, most people can.
Yeah, I think I basically just use the basic stuff.
Yeah, and again, it's free. So if you download it and install it and decide you don't like it, you've wasted a little bit of time, and that's it.
Okay.
All right,
well,
good
thank
luck.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
Yeah, sorry we couldn't be more help.
Huh? You were.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, good day.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I hate that. I hate having to say that to people, but we're really at the point that I don't know what else to say. Look, we have finished our first hour of this show, I'm a little shocked to say. But don't worry, we're going to be here for a whole nother hour, whether we like it, I mean, rain or shine. And so we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. And you, it is 59 minutes after the hour, and we are delighted and proud to know that you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful for you because we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray. Member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second of this week's hours of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites, and we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And don't forget that starting next week. I should mention, just jump in there for a second. As you folks may or may not know, our fund drive does start this coming Monday. And our own Alex Wheeler designed the new T-shirt. There's going to be a limited edition. So if you're pledged next week and give, say, $90, you can get one of those limited edition T-shirts. It's got a whole new – you can see it on the website. If you go to jazz901.org, our new T-shirt that's have this new design on the back and, of course, our standard logo. But it is going to be a limited edition. And what better way to show off your pride that you support a great jazz station – than to maybe sign up and give one of those. But we will be starting the pledge drive as of Monday morning. So, you know, folks,
save your shekels. You got a week to
get ready, because you folks all say, and you hear us each week, you know, how much you folks appreciate the support that we give you folks. Well, now you got to turn around and support us.
That's
and
right. We need it.
This coming Friday here at the radio station, Friday, March 24th from 5 to 7 p.m., we are having a special live concert from Jimmy Highsmith Jr.
Who's amazing, by the way.
Amazing, yeah. And if you make your donation and your pledge there, you get a special gift from the show.
Yeah, and come and tour.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can tour the station and see where everything goes.
Visit the DJs.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good deal.
See the tiny booth we're in.
Yeah.
One or two of you might be able to see the booth we're in.
That's a crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Part of the deal, of course, is that two out of three of us are not slight individuals, and that just makes it that much more crowded. All right, did we get somebody on the line?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Carl. Yeah, you do. You already told me it's Carl from Boxed. One of us is getting senile. One of us is getting senile, and I don't remember which one that is. So to the phone.
Better not be me because I'm operating the board. We're going to be in a world of hurt if that happens.
Our next caller, apparently, some little birdie told me, is Carl from Pottstown, PA. How are things down there, Carl?
Good. How's things with you?
Oh, snowy, of course.
We're digging out.
Yeah, a couple of feet of snow, and we're Rochesterians. Big deal.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I had to dig my car out of the snow the other day.
Yep. So what's up?
Anyway, I do have a question. First, I wanted to comment. On the last hour, you're talking about getting cookies when you went to visit your webmail. And yep. I was thinking that I should call and just mention that anybody who wants to download a web browser extension called Ghostery can stop those cookies and also display trackers. So that's what I did. Right. I really like the way it works.
Right. And, it's called Ghostery.
Right, Ghostery.
Right. And Steve's going to put up a link to it.
Another one that I really like now, too. Oh, I can't get to it.
Are you not you?
Yeah, I'll have to sign into the proxy. Ghostery's good. Another one I like is called uBlock Origin.
That's the one I use.
They tend to, they don't like it when you call them an ad blocker because it's a content blocker, and the thing it usually contents the blocks is ads.
But, right.
But it blocks a lot of the malicious stuff that comes in too. And they all count how many things they've stopped, and it's just amazing to watch your count go up. And
yeah.
And you know, I've had 200 or 300. You know, the earlier caller was getting 1,000 cookies a day. You know, I've been on websites where I'll get 500 in a 5 minute span.
In a 5 minute span, I'm at support.microsoft.com, and MicroBlock Origin is block 20 ads just on this one page. 20 contents.
Yeah.
I guess is the way to put that. But yeah, Ghostery is amazing. So is MicroBlock Origin. You're absolutely right. If you're using the internet in any way, shape, or form, it's not a bad idea to do those things.
One of the dangers, though, is that most websites are funded by the ads they display. And if too many websites put up block, you know, including ours and Nick's,
yeah.
if too many people put up ad blockers, then those websites will have to find another way to monetize. So turn off the blocker on the sites you go to a lot and want to support. Google used to have a product. They've discontinued it, and it's going to come back again, Google Contribute, where you pay Google like $10 a month or whatever you want to donate. And since Google owns ad DoubleClick, one of the biggest ad networks,
yep.
Google will not show you ads, but they'll still pay the site you went to. So you get to pay the sites you want to pay, and you don't get to see the ads. And so the site still gets monetized that way.
Right. And I will admit that I hope to make a couple of bucks off of my websites, but very few people ever click on any of my ads, and most people I know are blocking them. So I don't know what I'm going to do about that. That's why Ask Nick is free right now, because I figure if enough people click on an ad every once in a while,
yep.
I won't have to charge users for anything. But that is what it is. But yes, you're absolutely right. And both Ghostery and MicroBlock Origin, which may show up on your search as uBlock Origin.
It's actually a mu.
Right, it's a mu, but
everything comes, yeah, it's uBlock.
Right.
So we've already seen websites will say, oh, you're running an ad blocker, please turn it off. And there was a case, it was Forbes, I think it was. As soon as you turned off your ad blocker, you got infected with a malicious ad.
Yep.
So the other thing the content blockers and ad blockers can do is stop these malicious ads from coming in as well. So that was quite an irony that the internet just had a big laugh about.
Bite you both ways.
Right. Yeah.
Good tip there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Carl. What else?
Well, the other thing was this. I have a question about downloading audio and video from the internet. If I go to a web page that has audio or video that is able to be streamed, you know, so you click on a link and it's streaming the video or the audio. But let's say the website is set up so you can stream the audio and video, but you cannot download it to your C drive. So, for example, if you wanted to download it to your C drive so that you could play it back after you're offline, you can't do that.
Right.
And I heard there was some software available out there that would allow you to go to such a website that's only able to stream, and software would actually allow you to download, even the website's not set up for downloading. Is that true? And if so, is there any such software?
Well, yes, there is, and some of it is actually kind of legit. there is a program called YouTube-DL. It's at YouTubeDL.com, YouTube-DL.com, and it has many, many sites that it can download from, but not all of them. So it depends on what sites you're trying to get stuff from as to whether or not it will work. And of course, the sites can do things to block you. Many of them hide where the actual file is inside a bunch of JavaScript. So that's kind of an issue.
Because technically, the video is downloading to your computer and playing instead of downloading and saving.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a command line program, and it's available for pretty much every operating system. And there are others that are available, but in terms of finding it, if you can't just right-click and select download, then the problem really is that there's a bunch of JavaScript in there that's actively preventing you from doing that. And many places do that because the things are copyrighted and you do not have the right to copy. You do not own the copyright. Beyond that, it's just a matter of what they want to allow you to do. And much of that these days, because of things like JavaScript, are easily controlled by the other end rather than by you.
Mm-hmm. At a bare minimum, you could run a capture program on your computer.
Yep.
On the Mac, you can use QuickTime Player to record the screen.
Right, Total Recorder.
Total Recorder under Windows. It would also record any other movements of your screen, or so you can tell it to capture just a window while you're doing something else.
If it's audio, you can just capture the audio.
Capture the audio mm-hmm. feed, yeah.
But yes, so there are ways around that with programs like Total Recorder, but on Linux, you can use, if you can isolate the stream, you can use MPlayer or pretty much any of those things to download it. But it is not something that's easily controllable at your end.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Just one more question then.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, I'll go to a webinar, like from GoToWebinar.com.
Yeah.
And it'll have both audio and video, and maybe it'll be about an hour long, and I'll want to record that webinar. And it's able to be downloaded, it will be recorded, but I don't have a piece of software that'll record video. I use Audacity to record audio. Is there any program that you could recommend that would record audio and video? A general program, something like Audacity records audio?
You're using Windows, yeah?
Windows 10.
Okay. There's a program called Screencast-O-Matic. There's another called Ice Cream, whatever, that will do that. What you're looking for is a screen recorder. Now, particularly when talking about viruses today, I've never used either of those programs, so I don't know. But you should be able, because I use Linux and it comes with
programs. And read the reviews on both.
Right. But there are CamStudio. Will do the same thing. It is an open source, free streaming video software thing. And what Cam Studio will do, without any of these screen recorders will do, is record your screen and save it to a file. Well, they are designed, of course, for you to give a seminar, right? Or to create a YouTube thing where you say, you click here, you do this, you type this, and blah, 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 and it's done. But, of course, it works the other way around. If you're watching somebody else do that, you can record what they're doing as well. That make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Okie doke.
Okay, thanks. Have a good day.
Thanks, Carl. You too. Have fun. Again, let us reiterate that you need to own the copyright, or it needs to be public sourced, open source, free source, whatever they're going to call it this week, in order to do that legally.
Creative Commons, a lot of the public streams are.
Right. So you just need to know that, and what happens between you and your computer, your consenting adult computer, is your business, but we will tell you that you should be legal.
And then you get into the joys of live recording, and when there's a mistake, it's hard to go back and fix it.
Yep.
Apparently, for the first segment of the show, I had my mic input source wrong for the YouTube stream.
Oh, my. What did we say?
I think it was set to the computer.
Yeah.
So it should have been getting nothing, because I've got it muted.
I hope so.
I'm pretty sure it was nothing.
I sure hope so, because I think we were rude to some of people we know. I think I particularly was rude. Mm-hmm. I may have used language that I generally do not use.
I should have hit the dump button.
Radio studio. Yeah.
I got four microphones in front of me, and if it's set to the wrong one.
Well, right.
So, actually, I think it was still set to last week's when I was recording the show from the audio stream.
Oh, right.
I was capturing the MP3 stream from the Jazz website and feeding it into YouTube.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones, and let me stop and apologize to anybody who got some sort of ear blast from me. Our next caller is Dave from Bergen, New York. What's up, Dave?
Hey, guys. I called about a week ago. I was having Wi-Fi problems, and I was asking you some questions about this LAN socket.
Power line converters.
Yeah.
Well,
I got one, and boy, it works beautifully.
Excellent. Which one did you get?
The Extolo LAN socket 1500.
There you go.
It's amazing. I knew about this years ago, but I never really looked into it again. But it's so simple. You know, you just plug them in. I got like three different computers in far-flung parts of the house.
Yep.
And they're all wired connection now, and I'm having no problems.
Wow. And that's 2 gigabit now. When I first started selling these in our store, in fact, I think we still have some in the store, they did 10 megabit connection.
Right. Now they're doing what, 2 gigabit?
2 gigabit.
Nice. And they're not terribly expensive. And most of them will work with up to 16. You have one, which is essentially a router.
The one that plugs into your router.
Right.
Yeah.
And it essentially then is the router for the power line Ethernet.
Right.
And then the others, you can have up to 16 others. You have another question?
No, I guess that's it. Just want to let you know that thing worked beautifully. I can't believe how easy it is.
Excellent. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Steve from Greece, New York on the line. What's up, Steve?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
You too.
I have been working with a friend of mine on a sound problem on his laptop. He's got a relatively cheap HP 1716P. He's got a sound problem. A little history. When he first got it, he tried to Skype, and he could speak clear. I mean, we could hear everything he said fine, but when he tried to listen to us, everything was garbled. And what he, more than me, he lucked into it. If he found out that any time he made... if anything on the computer generated a sound, that's when it kicked in. In other words, it would be fine, nice and clear. If he pushed a cap lock so it made a sound, bingo, then it got garbled. So he shut down all the sounds in his computer. Skype, it worked fine. I'm trying to tie this to the latest Windows update. I'm not sure if I can, but now... it's garbled again with no sounds on, and he is able to, again through luck, if he unplugs his headphones and then plugs them back in, the sound he receives will clear up.
Okay, a couple of things. Was this originally a Windows 7 machine that got updated?
I shouldn't have known. It was new out of the box.
Okay, so it's a Windows 10 out of the box.
Right, Windows 10 home.
Okay, that wasn't the answer I wanted.
Yeah, really.
You might be having a problem with the Realtek audio driver.
Right, now he's tried to update them, but there are no updates. So, sorry, I can't hear you.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like an IRQ conflict.
Yeah, it does. Well, here's one of the things. When let me ask this. When I plug my headphones or a speaker or anything into the computer,
yeah,
I get on Windows 10, I get a window that pops up and says, oh, you just plugged something in. What do you want to do with it? Does he see that?
I can't tell you that, and obviously I don't have him on the line now.
Right. Check that. Because you need to then select the correct input.
And if he doesn't see that, if that doesn't pop up?
Then there's something messed up with his install or something.
I would still suggest it would not hurt to first check for an update, and then if that doesn't work, delete the audio driver completely and reinstall it. Particularly since it's an HP device, he can go to the website, put in his serial number,
and get the current file
and get the correct download. So do that first. Then when you do an update, even if it means you delete the device entirely, when it comes back up, it'll say, do you want to look on the net or do you have a file? And tell it you've got the file and then give it that file and then it should update. Mm-hmm. But I would suggest that's the first thing you go, because this is, in fact, a known problem with a lot of Windows 10 machines, the Realtek audio.
And to uninstall it, make sure you use the Revo uninstaller. That really removes all the remnants that are lurking in the registry that could, you know, cause a snap, you know, in your install trying to do it fresh.
Well, I can't believe you asked that question, because that was when we got done here, I was going to ask if you preferred Revo or IO-Bit.
No, we prefer Revo. IO-Bit is not bad.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to my original thing. So basically, try to get an HP update, which I didn't tell him to do. I forgot to tell him to do that. If that doesn't work, uninstall the drivers completely.
Well, before you uninstall the driver, go up to the HP support site, put in your serial number, and download the correct driver. So you've got it on your machine so that Windows doesn't have to go find it somewhere. Tell it use this one that's already on your machine, which you know is the right one from HP.
Right.
Okie doke.
Now, if there are two audio drivers, you guys, I'm not hearing anything you're saying right now.
Yeah, we are. If you've got two audio drivers, it in itself could be the problem.
Yeah.
You really only should have one, and it should be for whatever your sound card is.
And if you go up to the HP website and there's two drivers up there, you know, most of the time it's a newer one's been updated a little bit, tweaked or whatever, but they keep them both up there because some folks have issues with the newer one depending on their machine that they're, you know, in.
Right.
And sometimes your computer model may have come with two different sound cards at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to make sure exactly which card you have as to which driver you need to download.
Yeah, and HP, right. Like you said, with the HP, you will be able to find out if he puts in the correct tag number for his machine, it'll have the specs that you can see what exactly drivers, hard drive, and everything else is in that machine.
All right.
All right.
Yeah, when I looked at the PDF, it says it's supposed to have DTS sound.
No, don't pay attention to that. Go to the website.
Yeah, go to the actual HP website. Yeah. Because, yeah, they can go generic, you know. Yeah, you know, whatever.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. I missed you last week.
Sorry. Yeah, we were only on the web last week because of the windstorm, whichever one it was, took out the power.
And I wasn't near a computer last week, just the radio. Thank you very much for all you do. I'll be calling in next week with a pledge.
All right. That's what we love to hear.
Thank you, sir.
That's what we love to hear.
I'm going to give a shout out to the Rochester Robotics Finger Lakes Regional running down at RIT right now. My son is an alumni of Team 578 out of Fairport. Dave's granddaughter is on Team 340 out of Churchill Charlotte.
And both seem to be doing pretty good out there, having a lot of time.
In the top 15.
Yeah, I wish I could be out there.
They're at lunch break now, and the quarterfinals are starting at 1:30. So if you're interested, high school kids making robots to fuel and gear up steampunk flying machines this year down at the RIT Gordon Fieldhouse. Scheduled to go until 7. It's just really fun watching. They've got a live stream running on the website. Rochester City School District is actually hosting the live stream, feeding the live stream, which is kind of interesting.
Nice.
All
right,
a lot of fun.
Good. Before I forget, several people have made contact with me to ask about if we need people to take pledges over the next week or two. And that's great. This coming week, this first week, we do not. But we will. I'll keep you in mind for the following
week.
Yeah. We'll see how that works. Well, that definitely will be not you.
So, yeah. I won't be here that Saturday.
Yeah. You've got something apparently that's more important. Okay. Hey.
And thus it starts.
It's just how it starts.
He won't be able to play anymore.
That's right.
All right. Tell you what. Both of you can discuss that with that individual next Saturday.
Oh, there we go. Now we're good. Sure.
You can tell her.
Yeah, right. Our next caller, we'll just go right to the phones now. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Good afternoon. I wanted to call and tell you I had a very interesting conversation with our new cable provider.
Oh, very exciting.
Very exciting. Very different. I went because usually when you want to negotiate your bill, you don't want to do it on the phone usually.
Right.
So I went to the office and they said, well, you know, now that we're Spectrum, you are considered a Time Warner legacy customer.
Oh, how exciting for you.
Yeah. I said, oh, well, what does that mean? She goes, well, let me see. And she starts putting codes in, and I'm standing there for 20 minutes on my bad knees and had to sit in a chair.
Yeah.
And they basically said, oh, well, there's nothing we can do for you, being that you're a legacy customer. None of our codes work for Time Warner now, and, you know, your bill's stuck where it is.
Yeah.
I said, oh, that's really good to know. And she said, well, if you become a Spectrum customer, you know, we have Select, Silver, and Gold. You'll get all three tiers, including all the pay movie channels. It's only $15 more than your bill is now.
Wow.
And you'll get 60 megabit internet. That's our standard now, where it was 15 for Time Warner. It's 60 for us.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I says, my goal is not to go up. My goal is to go down. I said, if I become a Spectrum customer and I just get the Select package, which I would be losing some channels that I watch once in a while, my favorite would have been NFL Network,
right,
which I would have lost, but I would have dealt with it. And she put it in and she goes, oh, no, only benefit you get out of that one is you get 60 meg internet. Other than that, you're going to pay the same price. I said, oh, so I can lose channels and pay the same price.
Nice.
But gain speed.
Let me think what I want to do here.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I guess what they do at Spectrum is they do retail pricing, and they don't do the package game,
right?
Where you get lowered down to a price, and then the next year it goes up, and then it goes up, and then it goes up. They do retail pricing, and you go there, and that's where it stays, other than
until it goes up and goes up and goes up
until programming changes or. You know, programming prices change or equipment, but they don't. If you go to them, they take away the modem fee.
Wow.
You know, if you go to Spectrum, there's no modem fee, But if you stay as a legacy customer, you pay the modem fee. So all you pay is the Wi-Fi, and you don't want to pay the Wi-Fi, get your own Wi-Fi router. I mean, your own Wi-Fi, yeah, router. So, you know, the only way I'm going to save money is if I don't use their modem router and get my own. And then I'll drop my bill $15, but there's no way for me to negotiate a price with them anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I figured this might be something people want to know, especially in this day of cutting the cord.
Yes.
Yep.
I think they're making it a little bit easier for us to make that decision.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know, they don't realize, being the new guys in town, how easy it is to, you know, find alternatives.
Well, part of the issue. There was an article I'm trying to find on Stop the Cap that Phil talked about the differences between Time Warner and Spectrum. Spectrum does not offer some of the same services Time Warner did. Chief among them was Whole House DVR. So if you have Whole House DVR and want to keep Whole House DVR, you can't switch to Spectrum. Under Spectrum, they just give you more DVRs, so you record on each DVR on each TV instead of recording on one to watch on many.
Well, that's what they said to me. They said also, being a Spectrum customer, if you wanted a secondary DVR with Time Warner, it was $25 plus the guide, which they charge for, and all the extra fees for the service. They only charge $5 more for the DVR.
Right.
Instead of $25. Any additional box is only $5 rather than paying, you know. And it's like, well, do I want a converter or do I want a DVR for the same price, you know?
Right.
Type of thing. But, you know, they are changing these things, but their base prices are way higher.
If your bill is over $200, you might be able to save money by switching to the new services. But if you're, you know, in that 100 to 150 range, it may not save you any money unless you really want to go to the 60 megabit internet. And for some people, that's more important than the TV channels.
Right.
Because once you have faster internet, you can do more streaming on the internet.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've told you before, and I'll tell you again. I have 15 megabit internet, and I've got two teenage kids. I got, one teenage kid and one 20-year-old that lives at home with us. Mm-hmm. And they're constantly streaming. And I stream quite a bit with whether it be Hulu or Netflix. And I'll tell you what, I don't get any buffering, and I get a strong. I get almost 18 megabits out of my 15 here where I am.
Yep.
At any given time, so you know I don't have a problem. I go, I really don't need your faster internet. You know,
right.
If I was having issues, I would switch to their faster internet.
Right. Right.
But for what they're giving me is working well for me, because I guess I don't, there must not be a lot of congestion in my neighborhood.
Right. And a lot of it depends on who's on your head end.
Right.
So yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to tell people it's going to be a brand new experience. And I think if people are thinking the way I'm thinking, they're going to restructure how they operate in this city eventually, because I have a feeling people are going to do a lot of switching.
Well, one of the things that they do not get, and Time Warner never got it, this is a very tech-savvy town. There are a lot of people who are very smart about technology. They know where you can, how to cut the cord and where to cut the cord and everything else. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple
of
minutes.
Guys.
Thanks. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Tim from Webster, New York on the line. What's up, Tim?
Yeah, hi guys. I was listening to that. I think he was your first call. With that infection he ended up getting, I was feeling really bad for him. And thinking about the situation, I've always wondered, why hasn't anyone ever designed like this red panic button on your keyboard that will at least immediately cut off your internet connection while you gather your thoughts and figure out how to handle the situation as compared to having to hit that power button as an emergency. It's, you know, that it seems like it takes forever for the shutdown to happen, and you're in panic mode thinking that you're getting an infection building, and who knows how much more damage is going to happen while you've got that button held down. And I just, it just seems like, why isn't there a just cut, get me off the internet button? It's, you know, I realize I can just use my mouse and cut myself a disconnect.
Yeah, there may be. We used to say just unplug the modem or unplug your Ethernet.
Yeah.
Now that everyone's on Wi-Fi, you have to turn off your Wi-Fi.
Right.
The problem is too many people would hit it by accident and be mad.
One of the things that we used to see is that many laptops did come with that switch. It was not a big red switch. It was a little black switch on the side or in the front.
And a little black switch on a black body that lights up black to let you know it's done.
That's the most annoying thing. But basically, the idea is that you could turn on or off the Wi-Fi. The idea being, of course, that it would save battery if you didn't have the Wi-Fi on when you weren't using it. So those things are there. The problem we had, and we had a lot of these at RIT when I was there at the Saunders College, people would hit them accidentally all the time, and then we'd get all these phone calls. I can't get on the internet. There's something wrong with it.
Wow, okay.
And so it became easier to actually take those buttons away than to deal with the hundreds and thousands of support calls that they would get every month.
My goodness, it was that bad?
Oh, yeah, because they hit it all the time. The same thing is true, and I flashed back on this for Steve's call a couple of calls ago. There used to be many laptops used to, and some do still have, a wheel for audio.
Yeah.
And if it got pulled down,
sliding in and out of your bag could turn the volume off.
Right. And so then we would get the calls and say, there's something wrong with my computer because the volume is down. And we would just say, well, turn the little wheel. Oh, it's back. Thanks. Yeah. Okay. Good.
So,
but that sort of thing became more of a pain and a support cost than it was useful to people.
And the threat these days is that the message is lying. You are not being infected.
Right.
By disconnecting from the internet doesn't stop the message and doesn't stop people from calling the phone number.
Matter of fact, the thing of it is, though, is once it pops up on your screen, that locks up your whole screen there, that you can't close down your browser or anything else. It literally freezes it.
Yeah,
so the only alternative, you know, disconnecting from the internet won't do you squat. It'll just, it'll disconnect you from the internet, but yet the screen is still going to be frozen there, and the only alternative to that is to shut the machine down and flush that out.
And most browsers have a feature that we've now had to turn off now, that when you reopen your browser, so you reopen, you know, Chrome or Safari, it automatically loads the last website you had open, which was the fake ad saying you had a virus.
Right.
So we have to turn that feature off because of the new threats. And an actual virus or an actual attack would not advertise itself because it wants to get into your computer and do stuff without letting you know. The symptoms of a virus typically are your computer gets slow, because the virus is doing too much.
Right.
And so it's the fake messages and the scareware that scare people into the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Disconnecting from the internet wouldn't do anything because the message is lying to begin with.
Yeah.
What if you, like me, like to hope that you're savvy enough that you can figure out when something's wrong? What about, I know there's like the whatchamacallit where you can go back in time. Isn't that, what about something that will take you a shorter duration back? Like, just get me back 2 hours ago.
Well, the Windows
restore
points and Macintosh has Time Machine Backup. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that will also save you from the actual ransomware infections that do come in and do encrypt all your files. You just restore from to a point before that.
But can so you many do it people just a couple hours ago?
Yeah.
Oh,
but the vast majority of people don't back up, and they don't have these restore points, and so it doesn't help any.
Oh, it's dependent upon backups.
Right, you have to put a backup drive.
So
in.
There is a program in Windows called the Task Scheduler.
Okay,
and you can use that to. I beg your pardon. Apparently, I'm just dying here. You can use that to set a restore point and the frequency with which you have the restore point.
Okay. Okay, that's very helpful. I'm going to look into that.
But while that restore point is being created, your computer might run a little bit slower.
Yeah.
And it's going to take up disk space. And so suddenly now you've got two more problems, and you'll turn it off because it's annoying.
Right.
Okay.
So there, you know, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, Tan Staffel, but also it's the problem of unintended consequences, right? You do one thing that's good and that causes something else that's bad.
Right. Okay.
And even people that are warned, like every email we send out to our customers, we tell people about these fake ads and fake tech support. And like the day after we send out an email, someone has called us up and said, "I just got infected. I read your email. I forgot about it." And this because big red message popped up on my screen saying you're being attacked, you're being hacked. Don't close the window, or all your files will be erased. And I panicked.
Yep.
Even though, you know, yesterday you read the message saying don't fall for fake tech support scams.
Are right. these primarily happening through these pop under things?
They're technically an ad. It's hard to say, and they're technically an ad on a website. So some bad guy, I want to find him and strangle him. Some bad guy figured out you can buy an ad to put diapers on a website. You can put an ad to put tires on a website. You put an ad that says you're infected with the virus, and in the ad is JavaScript code that opens the ad, you know, either full screen or in what we call a modal dialog box. So you can't do anything else. And if you try closing that window, it just spawns more windows. And it works through the ad network. So the ad providers and the advertising systems are trying to clean those up now. But it's so automatic that the agencies, you know, millions of ads a minute are shown on websites. And we used to be able to say don't go to seedy websites like porn sites or pirate sites. But now it's major websites, Facebook and CNN and BBC, have ads, and those ads are being infected.
I was just going to say, I've always had my homepage set to Yahoo for the mail and stuff, and I get my news. And down that right side, you'll see yep. other pictures that'll take you to other either news items, or it will say sponsored. And sometimes you yep. don't always see the sponsored in faint writing. You click on it, you land on a page that is a mess.
Right, yep. Tons of ads. That's one of the reasons why we don't recommend Yahoo anymore. Use Gmail, use Google News, because there's no ads, which is ironic because Google owns the biggest ads networks.
Right, but and that's one of the reasons we say use something like Ghostery or Microblock yeah. Origin. Again, hypocrite that I am, but you should use those because you never know what... Like I've said, the ads on Ask Nick and on Soundbites... come from an ad network, so I do not necessarily have control over what ads show up on right. my pages.
Well, two things about Yahoo. Number one, Yahoo's been having all that business yeah. trouble for a yeah. long time, so...
And they lost a billion email accounts twice.
Right. But, and what about then, if they're featuring these ads, what about the accountability for the mess that it can cause people?
Well, they're not yeah. responsible. They're just the carrier.
Yeah, and they don't
right? control. I'm not responsible for the ads that Google shows on my page.
Yeah, it goes back to the common carrier laws that you don't sue the phone company because you got a dirty phone call.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
Do we do dirty phone calls
you
anymore?
Don't think Yahoo should be accountable for because they make
well,
money
here's
off
the
of that.
Well, yeah, if they were, they would have to then stop using ad networks and yeah. start making their own ads, which means they have to hire all those people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It did hurt them in their value. Verizon is buying Yahoo, and it dropped the value $1 billion.
Right.
Wow.
But Verizon is still buying Yahoo. And we're why? With right. all these problems, why would Verizon still want to buy Yahoo?
Right. I was thinking the same thing.
Yep.
My goodness, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
I'm calling in to donate during the drive, so thanks so much for your time.
God you. Bless you. That's okay. what we want to hear.
Yep,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
There's a Macintosh software programmer called Marco Arment, and he has written a lot of really cool programs. He does a podcast. What's the name of it? Oh, shoot, I forgot. But he wrote a content blocker for iOS called Peace. So you have peace while you're watching your websites.
Right.
So on September 16th of 2015 is when this happened. He introduced Peace. I think it was like $10. It quickly became the number one selling program on the App Store. On September 18th, he said, I guess this just doesn't feel good because he makes his money from right. ads. And so he's blocking his source of income. It doesn't feel good. He withdrew the software and gave everyone their money back because it's that catch 22. You take ads on your website, but you're giving a tool to someone to block the ads.
Right.
You want to block the bad ads, not the good ads.
Right.
There's no way to know that.
Well,
at the
with
moment.
All of these, of course, with all of these sites, you can, for example, whitelist
yes.
certain things, right? So
yep.
you can whitelist Ask Nick, you can whitelist Soundbites,
yeah.
And still block the ads on other sites. All right. That music tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in, and I do want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next time. That's about all I can tell you about that. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and we'll be back with a whole lot more of a nice sweater. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe in just 166 hours. It's Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.